Hey everyone, that's Wes.
And that's John.
And this is the Nintendo Show, the best damn Nintendo podcast on the internet. High five, we nailed it.
Yeah!
Did not even tell you that's what we were going to do. this is the original crew. Ryan is not here.
No, screw that guy.
Yeah, Ryan is getting ready for another raid on the Capitol.
Yep.
Him and all his QAnon buddies are eager to reinstall Donald Trump as the rightful president of these United States.
I didn't know we could do it that way.
We can't. Oh. He's going to jail. So, this is going to be the mini show for the month of March 2021. So we'll talk about whatever we damn well please. I got some games, some video games, some Nintendo video games. Yes.
On the Nintendo show?
Right, we'll keep it focused.
That's ludicrous.
At some point, though, we are going to have to do like an After Dark or a spin-off like episode where we talk about some PlayStation games, because I have been playing a few of those that I think are going to be fun to talk about.
Which ones have you been... this is the mini show. This is the place to play it. Talk about it.
No. We're going to do Nintendo games this time. But Final Fantasy VII, Persona 5, and I also picked up the Resident Evil 2 remake.
Oh, yes. You did mention that.
And I haven't started the Resident Evil 2 remake yet, but those other two games are quite good. Yeah, pretty darn good games.
Yeah. But I did grab from my coworker Horizon Zero Dawn.
Okay.
So I know you wanted to play that.
Right.
So let me know when you're ready for it.
Okay.
I actually went to bring it tonight, and I completely forgot.
That's okay. I won't be ready for it for a little while.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of really long Switch games that I'm going to be playing for the next couple of months, so I don't want to add another really long PS4 game onto the list as well.
Yeah. Monster Hunter is going to take up... It depends on how in-depth you want to go with Monster Hunter, but if it's anything like World, it's going to eat up a lot of time.
I am not planning on buying another, lengthy Switch game. I grab an indie game off the eShop, like a short one, just to kind of help keep the momentum going. But I'm not planning on buying like another big Switch game in the entire month of April or May. So I kind of have like those 2 months blocked out. Like, this is where I'm going to be hitting Monster Hunter really hard, and possibly most of June as well. We'll see.
I got Monster Hunter with you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this month. And then following month, I'm picking up Pokemon Snap. I have to. That's a day one purchase. Okay. Taking off work. I mean, this is...
I cannot
fucking wait.
But that's not until, that's April 30th. Yeah, so you'll have, the entire month of April there as well to focus on Monster Hunter. It's going to be good. But before we get into anything else here, I do want to give a quick wrap-up thought on Blue Fire. I finished it. I was able to make it to the end. It did not bug out on me right at the last second, so I got to the credits. And I can definitively say that if they manage to get all of the bug fixes in order, like if they make this game technically competent, then I think it's worth a play. Once I got past, I had a big obstacle in my way. That it was this boss, the one that I mentioned a few weeks back where I kept on respawning in the lava that one time.
Yep.
It was a very buggy boss. It was a very buggy area that I had to work through in order to get to that boss. So it was a lot of just kind of bashing my head against a wall to get to a boss that I couldn't beat. And I ended up kind of just exploring around, doing some side stuff, similar to Hollow Knight, finding badges that would give me different abilities and kind of build up my character a little bit better. And once I did all that, I was able to beat that boss and beat up the next boss. And they kind of send you on this Tears of Light kind of side quest.
We don't need that again.
No, but I didn't mind it all that much. There were a couple of times where I'm searching, okay, where the fuck is the last one? But overall, I came away really happy with the game, and I'm really glad that I stuck with it, because if I just kind of rage quit in that terribly built boss area that I was in, I would have come away from the game totally hating it. But I stuck it out, and I found some fun things to do while I was building up the character to be able to take on that boss. And the rest of the game was kind of breezy once I got to the point where I was able to take out that fire boss, and there were two, maybe three more bosses after that, And yeah, didn't really have much of a hard time with any of them. So yeah, and you know, if I'm going to keep an eye on, you know, if they do any updates to the games and kind of fix the technical issues. And once all that gets squared away, yeah, a lot like Bloodstained. Really good game if they can just get it running the way it should. And then the other game, I don't know, I was about to say the other game that I have wrap-up thoughts. I don't have wrap-up thoughts. What I do is I have thoughts on Bravely Default 2, which is a game that came out at the end of last month. We missed talking about it on the official show because we recorded that before it came out, but it is now out. I've had it for a couple of weeks now. I've clocked just about 32 hours.
God.
So yeah, I'm plugging away at it. I'm in chapter 3. I don't know how many chapters there are. If I were to take a guess,
13.
Oh God. I've heard other people talking about this game and like saying that it's like taking them anywhere from like 60, 65, 70 hours to get through the whole thing.
God.
I did hear someone talking about it on a podcast, and this guy had the game for review, so he had it before it came out. And he spent like 75 hours with the game, but he talked about it like he was just kind of doing a lot of grinding just because he was having a lot of fun with the battle system. So I don't suspect that 75 hours is going to be a typical case of how long this game is going to take. I guess that's all to say that I think I'm probably getting near the halfway point. I have more than half the jobs. You can kind of tell how many jobs there are because you have like a couple of rows that you can fill up worth of jobs. And yeah, I'm liking this game quite a bit.
It looks a lot like Octopath.
And it plays a lot like Octopath. I don't think... Well, they're both Square Enix games.
So there's no lawsuits.
Right, so they're allowed to copy each other. I don't know... it's definitely a different development studio. It's also different a development studio than that made the other Bravely Default games. This is a different studio entirely. But I think the director and the producer might be the same. And it was also the director and producer of Bravely Default, the DS games, the 3DS games, that were also the director and producer on Octopath Traveler. So these guys kind of have like their kind of ideas on how RPG battles should work. Okay. And it's like Octopath, like Bravely Default, like Final Fantasy IV Heroes of Light. If anyone remembers that game on the original DS, it is either defending to build up the number of actions you can take, or gambling right at the start and going into the negative of how many actions you can take, which will then cause you to have to like cycle through turns until you get back up to zero. And while you are going through those turns where you can't take any actions, you're also exposed because you can't defend. So, you know, there's a risk involved with trying to just go all out from the start and win. But there's so far, like, the rando battles that I've run into, it doesn't take long before I'm able to just, no matter what my character classes are, just spam attacks with everyone, just, like, right at the beginning of the fight. Use the Brave skill to use up all the turns that I can and just all-out attack and do pretty well. And even if I don't kill everyone in, like, one huge volley of attacks, I'm able to survive long enough to where, like, the next character that's able to do some things is able to finish everybody off. So that hasn't been a big deal. And they do have a speed-up mode. You can have, like, 4 times battle speed, which is great. Because there are times where I'm, like, really close to, like, upgrading a job and learning a new skill. So I was like, okay, let's just do a few fights here while I'm over-leveled and these enemies are really exposed, so I can just max out this job. Then they do this this really clever thing. So I'm going to spend a bit of time here on the battle system because it's like the primary method of gameplay. When you're running out in the world or a dungeon, the battles are not random, which is a change for the Bravely Default series.
I really like that.
I like it to an extent. So the thing about, like, you're able to avoid battles if you don't want to play them. And enemies will even, like, run away from you if you're over-leveled for that area. And when they run away from you, you can chase them down, hit them with your sword, and enter a battle with an advantage. Because when you are able to hit an enemy from up, from behind, initiate a battle, and if you're swinging your sword, you'll start with, like, plus one to your BP. So you get, like, free extra turns, basically. And the enemies, if you attack them from behind, they'll be delayed in the fight. In Bravely Default 2... Sorry. Bravely Second, which is the second Bravely Default game. Not Bravely Default 2. That's the third Bravely Default game, the one on Switch.
Fuck them.
I know, right? It's so fucking stupid.
I mean, wait, they work for Microsoft as well? I don't...
I mean, maybe. But, you know, like, this is just kind of... It seems like it's a thing with JRPGs where they'll have, like, a series. The second game, they'll... like, call it something else, and then they get to the third one. I was like, oh, no, this is two. They did it with Xenoblade. Xenoblade 2 is the third Xenoblade game.
Yeah, but that one I was okay with, because Xenoblade X wasn't in the same world and connected.
I mean, well, spoilers, but Xenoblade 2 is only vaguely connected.
It is, but it's still more directly connected to 1, opposed to X, which I don't know how X ended, but if I remember the way that you described it to me, it's kind of like its own... separate thing.
I mean, I guess, but...
It's not...
So my own personal theory about X is, if you remember in Xenoblade Chronicles, Hans, the scientist guy who creates the Bionis and the Mechanis by creating another universe, he's doing these experiments. He's doing this thing and executes his experiment because Earth is under attack by an alien race. At the beginning of Xenoblade Chronicles X, Earth is under attack by an alien race, or two alien races are fighting over Earth, and humanity, ends up fleeing Earth in this Ark ship and crash landing on the planet Mira. So I think you could probably make a case that as Hans is creating this extra universe, other humans are fleeing, so this might all be connected. But this is all narrative bullshit. Like, none of this actually matters. This is all just silly.
Yeah.
So
it makes sense to me. Because it's like, I'd use Xenoblade 1 and 2 as essentially roughly the same story. You're just seeing it on two sides.
I don't know. I think it's a bit of a stretch. But whatever, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, really.
You know what? View them as the same story. You do you.
Yeah, thank you. I will do that every night before I go to bed. That's how I get sleepy.
Yeah, that makes sense. So when I was mentioning when you're overleveled for an area, the enemies will run away from you, which is great. That's a nice little touch. It would be really nice if they take a page out of like Earthbound, and if you're like super leveled, like if you're way, way, way overleveled, instead of actually initiating the fight, it just like you hit the enemy with a sword, you just automatically win.
That would
and
be nice.
And it gives you like the money and the experience from that, because at that point like the experience would be minuscule. You wouldn't be like leveling up, but it would be a way to farm experience to level up your jobs, which there's a max job level of 12.
People will milk the crap out of that, though. They will just go to the starting level and just run circles.
there are some really cool videos already about how to farm certain things. Like, there are just, like, consumable items that will just give you, like, plus 3 to your speed, plus 5 to your speed. I mean, it's a little bit random how much it gives you, but they're just, like, it's just called, like, booster buns, and they look like little rolls, like little bread rolls. And there are enemies that will drop them. There are enemies that you can steal them from. And it's like for every stat. And there's videos out there like, okay, here's how you can farm these things and get really high speed stats for all of your characters just by getting all these things and using them. You can experience orbs and job experience orbs. You can harvest all these things. And you can even get a lot of these fairly early in the game. I saw a video the other day, like most JRPGs, there are some fights that are just scripted losses. You can't win. Or so you think. Because there is a fight at the end of the prologue against a character who I think is going to be a boss very late in the game. Because he's like the overpowered demon-looking guy that you run into in every JRPG. Oh, yeah,
of course.
And you fight him, and it's a scripted loss. Like, the game continues after you lose. But I saw a video of a guy who did so much grinding right at the beginning of the game that he was able to win. And it actually sent him to, like, an ending scene and rolled the credits. I was like, holy shit, the game took time to think. The developers took time to think, like, there are going to be some nerds who torture themselves to try to win this fight. And he did it. I roll credits. He won the game. It even took him to, like, I think it might have taken him to, like, a save screen to start, like, a new game plus. And, like, his time spent in the game was, like, 30 hours to that point. So he's, like, spent as much time in the game as I have. And never made it out of the prologue, which sounds just like pure torture.
Oh, my God.
Thank you, sir, for committing to that to see if something would happen. But my goodness. Somebody get him a day of his life back. So, where was it with the battle system? So, in Bravely Second, that's where we left off. That's what we started talking about Xenoblade. In Bravely Second, you are able to just choose to chain battles together. Like, if you get into a fight and you want to keep going, you can tell the game, no, bring on another one, and bring on another one, and keep going like that. And the more battles you are able to complete in succession like that, the more experience, and more importantly, job experience, to level up your jobs, you can get. So there were points in Bravely Second where I found, like, this is a really good place just to harvest battles and win a lot, and I was able to max out every job with every character. And I started timing it in one particular place where I was able just to fight a lot of undead monsters, so, you know, cure magic would wipe them out very easily. And I was able to take a job from, like, level 1 up to max level in about 6 minutes.
God.
Yeah, so it didn't take long at all just to, like, okay, next job, and keep on going. So you're not able to chain battles like that in Bravely Second because the battles aren't random. You can use like a consumable item that you find to allow you to chain battles together a little bit easier. But it's just not nearly as friendly as it was in Bravely Second. Also, they ditched the... It's not purely turn-taking. There's an active time bar now, which is like the amount of time you have to spend waiting. Like, the time bar fills up faster the faster your speed is, so your speed stat has a bit more of a function, but, like, it's functionally the same, because in the other games, if I remember correctly, it was like Final Fantasy X, where it showed you the order that characters were going to go, which I think is, like, a perfect way to do it. And then, like, the higher your speed, the more turns you were going to get in that order. Now, they'll tell you when you're in a fight, there'll be, like, an exclamation point next to an enemy if they're going to move soon, so you can see who you want to target next. But I think that... And when you're selecting your moves, everything pauses. Like, everyone's time bar pauses. So I'm not sure why they decided to do a time bar, because it essentially functions the same as if it was just the order of characters, except it's just... When you have your battle speed up the highest, it's harder to read at a glance which one of your characters is going to go next. So you don't really, you're not really able to set up for them. But, you know, it's not something that is a huge complaint either, because it's functionally the same with only a couple little hindrances. So not a huge deal. Just, I don't know. I think it would have been the right decision to have that, like, purely turn-taking, see the order of characters rather than the way they did it. But again, not a huge detriment to the game. A lot like Octopath Traveler, every enemy has a few weaknesses, but you don't have to do anything like break down defenses in order to expose them and do big damage. It's just these are the things that are going to be most effective against them. And most of the time, you'll be able to get through battles with whatever. But, you know, bosses, big enemies, they'll also have resistances. So, you know, like, fire will do half damage to them. So you don't want to use any fire magic or anything like that. Or sometimes they'll have immunities to things like earth magic and that kind of shit. So, you know, when you're doing a boss fights, there are times where you do want to pay attention to, you know, what they're weak to or what they're immune to. And then you can also spec yourselves out too. Like we're just scoping out, doing some scouting on a couple of bosses in chapter 3 just a few minutes ago. And, you know, one of them is a weak to darkness and uses light magic. And I have an accessory equipped to one of my characters that nullifies light magic damage. So, you know, before I attempt that boss fight again, but go try to find more of those and totally negate that weakness that I have. And like the other Bravely Default games, you have your job system, you have your main job and your sub job. You only ever gain experience for your main job, and your sub job, you can use all those skills. It's always good to have sub jobs, like someone who's a white mage, so you can always cure. There are some jobs.
What's the benefit to having, like, the white mage, is it better? Does it matter if it's in the sub or main job, or is it better in the main job, but the sub job gives you side stuff?
It's going to change things like your HP and your MP. Clearly a white mage is going to have more MP and less HP than a tankier class. So you'll get some minor adjustments. It's also going to, like, your characters have base stats, and that's going to kind of morph around depending on their equipment and the job that they have. But you kind of like judge what job they're going to be good at kind of along those base stats. It also just kind of gives you like these pretty blatant hints when you acquire a new job. There's like these shiny little MacGuffins, they call them asterisks. And when you acquire one from an enemy that you beat, a boss character, it will show one of your main characters like holding it. Like, it's a pretty strong nudge, like, hey, this person would be good at this job. And you can, of course, mix them around. I've had characters work on jobs that aren't theirs because skills will match up well. So if you want your character to have the white magic, those curative spells, but you want them to pump out more damage, you know, you can set the white mage as a secondary job and then like a ranger as a main job. If you're not worried about pumping out damage with that character and you just prefer to be more proficient or have more MP at your disposal, then you just set the white mage as your main job, of course. But along with like active skills, curative magic, attacking magic, different types of attacks and things, there's also passive skills. And you don't have to have the job associated with those skills equipped in order to have those. So once you learn the passive skill of a black mage, that's a bad example. I can't think of a passive skill for black mage. The hunter class has a skill that reduces the amount of MP needed to cast a spell. Something super useful for a mage. So even if you don't want to have a hunter class as a primary or a secondary job, having that around for a little while to be able to learn that passive skill gives you an advantage for your mage classes. So there's a lot of stuff there you can mix and match. One of my favorite things right now is there is a berserker class, and the berserker class will learn a passive that turns your standard attack into attack that just attacks everyone on the field.
That's what you stuck on your thief.
And I stuck that on my thief because my thief also has a skill that turns attack into mug. So I have a chance to harvest items. So I can harvest, you know, a decent amount of items if I'm lucky in a big fight. The downside is that if you're in an area where a lot of the enemies are going to counter when you attack them physically, the thief can find himself dying quite a bit.
Oh my god.
So there's a trade-off. I think the game, like, it's different from the 3DS games because it is more of a dungeon crawler. And I think, like, as a dungeon crawler, it works really well because when you enter any given dungeon, you shouldn't expect to be there until you complete it. And they signal you this because by giving you warp points. There's a certain point in the dungeon, there's the blue orb, you step on that, it can send you out to the beginning. They also give you consumable items that will warp you to the beginning of a dungeon. So there are going to be times where you're not near a save point. There's also different save points in dungeons where you're able to use a tent, but you're not going to be near one, so it's just going to be time to leave and go heal up and then come back. And I think, like, thinking of the game in those terms, I think it makes it more enjoyable. Like, rather than thinking, I'm going to enter this dungeon and I'm not going to leave until I finished it, especially early on, is not the right way to approach the game. I think the right way to think about it is, okay, I'm going to go in there, I'm going to find some treasure chests, I'm going to go as far as I can. If I'm able to get to a heal point and, like, restore my MP, then cool, I'll keep going. But you shouldn't ever, like, be concerned about, okay, I'm going to go leave, I'm going to go stay at the end, maybe see if I can get some new gear and come back. I think that the game works really well in those terms. There's a story there.
Somewhere.
I don't know what's happening. It's inconsequential. There's some characters, and they say things.
Do you only have those four characters? Because I've only seen those four.
So there's your four active party members, and then there are other characters that will join you, but you can't command them in battle. They'll just kind of jump in.
Okay, so you're going to have those four the whole time.
Seems like it.
Okay.
Seems very like it. That's kind of like, that's how the first two games are as well.
Okay. One of them's name is Elvis.
Yep, there's Elvis.
That irks me for some reason.
And Adele.
Okay,
they're all named after musicians.
That duo.
There's
one called Scott, right?
Seth.
Seth, okay.
Named after the great musician Seth Rogen. Couldn't think of anyone named Saul. And then Gloria. Is there like a famous musician named Gloria?
Sure. I don't know.
I don't know either. But yeah, they're all there. The character models aren't great.
It's weird, like, style.
Like the backgrounds, like the backdrops of the world, like the towns and stuff, I think those all look really nice. All the enemy models I think look really good. But yeah, there's something about those character models that it doesn't seem to fit with the world that they're in. It's like these very like stylized, very detailed environments and enemies, and then you have like these character models that aren't very stylized or detailed. They're more like utilitarian. They're just kind of there to serve a function.
It's like how do I put this? I got nothing on this. They make me think of those little toys as a kid. Just a little figure that you're just bobbling around. I mean, there's not much to them.
Yeah. I can see that. Like, and I don't know. I think maybe it's because like they're supposed to be like these blank slates, and like you change their clothes around to change their jobs. I don't know. I don't know if that justification works, because really the only thing to the characters is the clothes they're wearing, their jobs, like, and their faces are kind of like these kind of like me's. They're like me's.
All right.
I don't know. I get it.
They should have just made the me's and make us make our own me's. Stick them in there.
Hey, me's are making a comeback.
Apparently.
Again, it's not like the biggest deal in the world, but yeah, they're just not great. But yeah, I'm having a good time with it so far. I'm having to, a lot of times, like, play typewriter style. You might have noticed.
I saw that. You had, like, a finger on top of the analog.
Uh-huh.
And then you had your other fingers on top of the buttons. You weren't actually holding the remote and using your thumbs. You're using your fingers and, like, typing around.
Right.
Why?
Well, let me tell you, Wes. A few weeks ago, probably 2 or 3 weeks ago at this point, I was playing a lot of games because things were slow at work. Mm-hmm. They're not so slow anymore. But I had about a week-long period or 2 weeks where, you know, so I was playing for, you know, a couple hours at work. And I was like, I'd play for a little bit before work and play a little bit at work and then come home. And playing games is like my primary form of entertainment. So I wouldn't like sit down and watch a movie. I would kind of like hang out in the bed with Dez until the kids go to bed. And then I'd go to the living room and play some more games. And my hands started hurting. Like, right here in between
You played so many video games that, oh my god.
Right between, like, my thumb and forefinger was getting kind of sore. Now, you might be asking yourself, did you stop? I didn't. I didn't stop at all.
Does it still hurt now?
I'm still a little stiff. But it got to the point where, you know, I'd be like driving to work and like massaging my hands, like, oh man, this is really starting to bug me. So after like putting up with it for a couple of days, like, no, I can't do that anymore. So, you know, you might be thinking to yourself, so you stopped playing games for a little while, right? No, I didn't. I
figured out how to play them differently.
I figured out how to play typewriter style. And then luckily, you know, I've just been playing a couple of different RPGs, like Persona and Pokemon and Bravely Default. So, like, playing typewriter style didn't make a difference at all. I didn't need to, like, quick reactions to anything.
No.
So, for about a week and a half now, I've been playing typewriter style. And, you know, well, I'm a little stiff.
I don't think you're going back. I think this is your new way.
This is what I do now.
For RPGs. Just go typewriter style.
I woke up this morning. My hands haven't been sore for a couple of days, but still a little stiff. So, you know, I'm still playing typewriter style. I'll see how I feel in the morning. But
I mean, I understand that. I mean, I was playing so much World of Warcraft that my left hand...
From the clickities?
From the clickities. Because it's not like I'm holding a remote and it's just my thumb and I'm just doing that. It's by all my fingers. And I had to do weird things like WASD to move.
Mm-hmm.
And then the two buttons next to W was that E and D,
sure.
I think. Those are strafing. And then all your abilities are on the number pads. And then you have the shift number pad to do secondary other abilities that you program. Because I can't reach over to 7 in the middle of combat while moving around. That doesn't... So, I mean, my hand was becoming a misshapen claw. I was like, oh, good, I'm getting carpal tunnel. This isn't... It was just killing me. And I'm like, I can't... I had to muscle through it. I got raid tonight. Like, it's... I understand the pain.
You should take a break.
I understand it. Oh, I'm good now.
Okay.
I barely played last week.
Hmm.
And I'm not going to be playing again. I'm house-sitting again, so I'm not at home with my computer. So I'm not going to be playing until, like, Wednesday.
Yeah, sometimes you just need to take a break.
I just got to take a break from it. I put 28 hours into World of Warcraft.
So, yeah, that's Bravely Default.
Yeah.
I like it. I think it's pretty good. I don't know where I would, like... I don't know. Maybe at some point I should rank all of the RPGs available on Switch. Because there's a lot of them now.
There is quite a bit.
But, yeah, I think... If you've never played a Bravely Default game, I think it doesn't have anything to do with the earlier games, so it's a good enough place to jump in. If you're unsure about if you would like this or not, there's a demo. But if you're looking for something more substantial, I think Octopath Traveler does a pretty good representation of what the battle system would be like. So if you if you've played Octopath Traveler or didn't like it, I don't know that this one's going to be
any better for you. It looks very Octopathy.
Right. The battle system is very similar, and you're going to spend most of your time in the game engaged with the battle system. So if you didn't like that in Octopath, then this probably isn't going to do it for you either. But if you did like it in Octopath, and like the job system, like the character classes in Octopath, some of them are directly jobs. In Bravely Default. So if you like
Beastmaster is like the regular hunter.
Yep.
You can tame beasts and stuff.
There's of course a white and black mage.
Yeah, white and black mage. Thief. You got that.
There's a couple of different
cleric ones. And dancer is the white and black mage. And
dancer was more of like a stat buffing character with dark magic.
Yeah. So
there's the scholar. The scholar.
Yeah, but that wasn't dark magic. That was just. Oh yeah, I guess that is black magic.
Like sort of like anima magic.
Yeah. So and then you had your warrior, which is going to be like your berserker and...
There's a couple of different sort of warrior-esque classes. There's I think there's a shield master character, which is more of like a pure tanky kind of thing. That's a class that's kind of funny because it, you're able to equip shields in two hands.
Oh, that's fun.
And just like become like this uber defensive... That's fun. Yeah. And it actually does a pretty good job of absorbing damage because you can combine that with some skills with another character class that I can't recall the name of it right now. It's kind of like a paladin, I suppose. But it's able to draw, use skills that draw aggro. So if you, have, the shield master as your main job and that paladin sort of class as your sub job, you can use the sub job skills to draw the aggro in and just...
It's not as fun as what you did in Octopath by pumping a ton of evasion to your thief.
Yeah.
Subclassing him into warrior and just having him taunt.
Now, I'm trying to see if I can make that work in Bravely Default as well.
Just up the crap out of somebody's evasion?
Yeah. Evasion and speed and then find a way to draw aggro.
I mean, seriously, that strategy in Octopath just seems like the way to go. That is so gross.
It worked out really well. it was really good because just the way that I was able to get that character spec'd out, like, he couldn't be touched. Anyway, Bravely Default 2. I like it. I think it's worth a play.
I'm going to discuss two movies. One extremely briefly, because we already discussed it, which I watched Whole Nine Yards the other day.
Thumbs up.
That was a fun movie. Yeah. I like Matthew Perry. I mean, it's all him, like, all the humor in him is being startled and crashing into things, running into the glass, sliding glass door. It's all physical comedy. Mm. But I like Matthew Perry. I wish he did more. Maybe not nowadays. He's weird nowadays.
Is he?
I don't know. He did a sitcom randomly.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, it was like a roommate with some other guy, and the guy was like a clean stand-up guy, and Matthew Perry was one of those laid-back.
Oh, was that The Odd Couple?
Is that remake? What it is?
I don't know. I thought I heard that they, like, years ago now, they're like rebooting The Odd Couple.
Yeah.
So maybe, maybe that was it.
I don't know. I smell a sitcom. Like, it was, I don't know. I didn't even watch an episode. It just seemed really weird and out there. But yeah, I really enjoy it. Bruce Willis was, I like him in those kind of roles. He's done a couple of them. I can't think of any off my head, but that weird, serious.
Yeah, like serious, but not self-serious. Like, he's kind of, he's not humorless, but he's not, like, wacky.
Yeah. The stiff humor.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I like him doing that stuff. It was always good. Yeah, it was a good movie. I liked it.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say that. But the movie I am going to discuss very briefly. Now and then I do watch certain movies with the full understanding that this is going to be a giant, messy train wreck.
Oh, where are we going?
And I'm going to hate everything about everything.
Okay.
And I saw it at work, and it made me laugh, because it's just so out there. And so, the other night, I rented it on Amazon, and I watched it. It's called The Iron Mask.
I don't know this one.
Jackie Chan and Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Okay. Is this new?
Relatively. We got maybe a month back at work it came out.
So, a couple of 60-year-old men.
This movie, I've never seen a movie more of a mess. It's complete and utter. I don't know what's going on. Arnold Schwarzenegger and Jackie Chan are like on the cover. They're like, hey, these are in it. They're in it together and blah, blah, blah. They're minor characters. They're not even that big of a deal.
Okay.
Like, they're there. Arnold is there to create a conflict to Jackie Chan's character. And Jackie Chan is there to get one guy out of a prison that is going to do something with the story. I still don't even fully understand.
So, like, they die early on or something?
No, they're still there. They just kind of were. So Jackie Chan's in prison.
As he should be.
So him and his daughter apparently are the people that this dragon in their far off land listens to. And the dragon gave the people healing tea. And then the dark wizards wanted the tea and the dragon. And so they imprisoned Jackie Chan and his daughter in two different jails.
Is Arnold one of the dragons or dark wizards?
No. Arnold is the jailer, the warden for Jackie Chan.
Okay.
And in some London prison. And it's the tower. And nobody escapes the tower in 500 years and blah, 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 blah. And he's very... Arnold's like the tower and blah, blah, blah. I don't know. He's such a weird character.
Okay.
What the hell? And Jackie Chan's like in prison with this other guy who apparently is a long lost Russian prince that has nothing to do with the main, no impact on the story at all. They don't address that at all. Like, they address that he is it and they need to get him out, but they never go to Russia. Like, he doesn't do anything. So
is that like the thing where we need to escape and take this Russian prince with us so we can get him back to Russia where a good...
Think it's going to be, but it never gets to that. They end up going to, like, the far off, like, to China to free the dragon who is taken over by the dark wizards.
I guess that's within spitting distance of Russia.
Kind
of. But, I mean, like, so is London.
There's this other, like, guy who was in the Russian jail cell with Jackie Chan's daughter. He gets her out when he gets released. And for some odd reason, he has to go to the East. I don't even understand why. And then he's some kind of famous cartographer, I guess. There's a big resistance thing going on about freeing the land from the dark wizards.
Okay.
the dragon's there, who the dragon can't fight back because it's chained up, and they stop trimming its eyelashes, and so they grow too long for him to open his eyes. This movie is a train wreck. I don't know what's happening. And the big mess of it all is they're mixing so many different kinds of styles of, like, filmography and stuff like that. Like, you don't know what kind of story this is. It just doesn't make any sense. And one thing that really threw me off is that the audio seems out of sync.
Oh, okay.
It's like when you're watching a foreign film and it's spoken in another language, so they had to dub over with English or whatever.
Right.
But they're speaking English. And the mouths almost match what they're saying.
Oh, interesting.
But, like, the end of the sentence may be a little, like, a couple words may be different.
Yeah, yeah.
So that
happens every once in a while with some Chinese films or even like some Japanese films. Like every once in a while, I did this, especially like Godzilla movies, where there is like your token white American guy, and he speaks English to everyone, and everyone speaks back to him in Japanese, and everyone understands each other because it's a movie. Who cares? But like, even though he's speaking English, they'll still dub over his voice.
Yeah, they did that. Except everybody already speaks English.
That is bizarre. Dubbed
for no reason, and so it doesn't quite match up at times. Like,
I wonder if like the audio got fucked up when they were shooting, and then they had to like re-record everything.
I don't know, because I'm sitting here watching this. And, like, for the first 10 minutes of the film, I thought it was my TV audio. Like, I'm messing with different things, trying to fix stuff. I'm going into settings. I synced a Bluetooth speaker. I was like, maybe that will fix it. And then I realized that the words weren't matching at certain sentences. I'm like, no, this is the fucking movie that's doing this.
Was it, like, the original actor's voices? Like, was Jackie Chan doing Jackie Chan's
Jackie Chan's doing Jackie Chan and Arnold. But the Russian prince was wearing an iron mask for, like, maybe 20 minutes of the movie, and then we never address the Iron Mask, so okay. I don't know why the movie is called The Iron Mask. His voice didn't seem to match up at all with him. Like, it just didn't... Oh, it was maybe just like so overly... There's three guys who serve the Chinese... The people, the true princess, which is Jackie Chan's daughter. There's a thing with them going on, but... I don't... The movie's a giant mess. It doesn't make any... There's some kind of weird creature that hangs out with Jackie Chan's daughter. It doesn't make sense what it is. It's like a little monkey with bat wings.
Okay.
It's very weird. It's there for some reason.
I'm going to have to watch this.
This
I got to get to the bottom of this.
This is such a mess. It is hilarious. There's...
Do you think they have an audio track where Chris Tucker is just doing all the voices? Because I'd watch that.
It's super funny how much of a headache this, and Jackie Chan and Arnold were in it briefly, really, if you think of it, and the ending is the funniest part to me, just because of Jackie Chan and Arnold Schwarzenegger, because it goes back to them.
Okay.
There was one part where the dragon is escaping, and it's breaking through its chains and everything, and Jackie Chan's in his jail cell doing movements along with it, and so you think, like, he's doing something with the chains, and so later on, Arnold walks in after they liberated the area, whatever, he's like, I got orders to free you. You're free. And Jackie Chan stands up and just drops all the chains. It's like, I've been free all along. And you're like, what the fuck is this? And then they had fought early in the movie, and so they were just like having this deep understanding with each other. Like, never fought anyone as good as you. And he's like, come back to China with me. And I was like, all right, let's go see this dragon. And so they're both in China now. And it's the dumbest thing I've ever. I don't know why these two famous actors would do something this bad of a movie. It's like they lost a bet. They're like, fuck, I gotta do this now.
Or like they dared each other. Like they're like friends in real life, and they read the script and they're like, well, you definitely wouldn't do this. I would do it. You're not gonna do it.
Like, oh.
Oh, we have to do this now. We dared each other.
Well, the movie's a train wreck. It's hilarious how just out there it is. I don't understand. There's too much stuff going on to really follow what the fuck to care about. I don't even know who's the main character in this. I don't know who's the focus. I'm guessing it's the daughter. I don't know. Oh, that movie, that hurt my head.
So, Fire and Ice is an NES game that got added to the Nintendo Online.
Okay.
Service. Application thing. It is a puzzle game where you're this little wizard dude. and you were able to swing your wand.
Using fire and ice.
Yeah, well, you were creating ice in order to extinguish the fires.
Mm.
So it's a very cerebral take on the dangers of global warming, I think, is what they're attempting to do.
I think this is what they're going for here.
It's an NES game from 1993. So, you know.
And so wasn't that the big global warming time?
We're in it right now.
That was the time where they're like, it's coming. Al Gore's going nuts.
I think it was after 2000. Then neither here nor there. we were aware there was going to be some sort of problem in 1993, yes. So when this game came out, you know, when the Super Nintendo was already a thing, it was a very late NES game. And what you're doing is that they kind of put you just in this they're one-room puzzles, and you have to use your ice to extinguish the fire. There are... You can pretty much like only spawn ice blocks diagonally down underneath you, like one square. So you're very limited in where you can place these blocks. But they do find like pretty creative ways to give you new things to do, like creating bridges to walk across using your blocks, and you have to like shove blocks and build towers and stuff in order to, you know, either push a block of ice or drop a block of ice onto a flame. That's how you extinguish it. And they a lot of times put you in like these very narrow areas, because when you spawn a block of ice and it's horizontally like next to a wall, it's attached to that wall and you can't do anything to move it. You're not able to push it or anything. So you have to find ways to have ice blocks independent of any sort of a wall or barrier, so it is movable. One of the big mechanics is where when you spawn ice, you can also despawn it. So, you know, you can create yourself a bridge and then delete the bridge behind you if you need to. And a lot of that comes into play when, you know, you have to drop a block onto something. You, like, create a bridge underneath it and then, like, spawn, like, or delete a bridge underneath something in order to have things come crashing down. You know, there's quite a bit to this game. There's 100 levels. Yeah, and the puzzles, when you know what you're doing, could take, like, a minute and a half to complete. Sometimes it's not clear what you have to do or how, so it can take a little while to get through. There's some real head scratchers in this game. There are quite a few puzzles that I've had to like look at because I just haven't been able to finish them. I look at a solution, like was I even attempting to do this the right way? And sometimes I was, and other times no, I wasn't. Like there were things that I didn't even think of to do. And sometimes it's just very esoteric shit, like stand in this one spot, spawn some ice, despawn some ice so you can shove a block, do the whole thing again so you can like put them all down this pit and basically build a tower of ice. When it comes to things like that, like when this game, I think like the biggest hindrance to this game is there are a lot of puzzles. Now that I'm getting into the middle of the game, I'm in the fifth world of 10. There's a lot of, like, repeat the same action, and then you have to loop around the level and then repeat the same action again. And when it comes to things like that, like, that's not really what I consider, like, a successful puzzle game. Like, I should be able to make some progress in a level and then maybe occasionally restart it. But when you build these puzzle levels where you have to build yourself a staircase or a tower of ice and then loop around and then use the whole thing again, you can get yourself into a lot of situations where you're just stuck and you can't progress anymore. And thankfully there's a rewind feature on the Switch where you can, you know, like rewind 30 seconds or like set save points and stuff. But it gets it makes it very difficult to know if you're doing the right thing or not when you get into a level and you can think of like a couple of like one thing you can do but can't really discern what your next step should be, because the next step it turns out to be like, hey, go try to work your way back and do the same thing again. I don't know, I don't really like that in a puzzle game where it's just like repetitious like that. So I mean, overall I'm having a pretty decent time with it. I'm gonna keep going to see if the they get a bit more creative with the levels that they do. They have added things as I've gone in, like in the fifth world, added in like pipes, and they're like Mario Star style pipes where you go on one side and come out the other. like the game at times tries to be a little too intricate for its own good. It's a very simple mechanic. You do a thing. You can't jump. All you can do is spawn ice and like fall down. Like if you can drop down, you don't take any fall damage or anything. So they do a good job of coming up with different ways, like different level designs to use those minimal skills in different ways. I think sometimes they go a little too far with how much they're asking you to do. But yeah, I mean, if you have a Nintendo Online subscription, you can try it for free.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you try it for $20, which is what you're paying for that online subscription. Yeah. It's not technically free. You have paid for it.
I saw Reign of Fire 2 somewhere. Is that on that shop?
There's a second Reign of Fire?
I think there is.
We need to track this down immediately. This needs to happen. I hope none of the original cast returns. Matthew McConaughey can't. Spoilers. Or can he?
He survived. He, at the very end, post-credit scene, cuts himself out of his stomach.
Oh, no. The dragon, like, he emerges from a dragon egg and becomes the dragon.
Oh, my God.
Oh, that's perfect.
Now he's a villain?
If that's not it, then, well, no, he's got to fight the other dragons as a dragon.
Oh.
Yeah.
McConaughey, glorious beard.
Oh, dragon. Yeah. It's like Mark Ruffalo Hulk style, where you can tell it's his face, but it's like a CGI Hulk. It's a CGI dragon, but with Matthew McConaughey's face.
Oh my God. Hollywood, are you listening?
Reign of Fire 3.
Yeah, that's...
McConaughey will do it. He's on board.
No, that's not a movie. It's talking about a game.
Oh.
Isn't there a game?
I think there's a Reign of Fire game. I don't know if there's a second one.
I don't know. I feel like I saw that somewhere. I was okay. Oh, look at that. I mentioned that to John. Not a movie. No, there's not a movie.
No, I'm disappointed.
No.
Although maybe I shouldn't be. Reign of Fire was perfect. It did not need any.
No, it doesn't need any more touching.
I have one more game. And it's Down in Bermuda. This is a game that came out a few weeks ago. It's relatively new. And
come on, baby, come on.
I think that's Kokomo.
Yeah, no, but still.
It does remind me of that song, though. Yeah. It's appropriate. So Down in Bermuda is... it's a really nice looking game. I really dig the art style. It's kind of like a... it looks like Goose Game because it's a bit more vibrant with its color palette. I think
I need to play Goose Game. I still haven't played that.
Goose Game's pretty fun. But Down in Bermuda is kind of pitched as a puzzle game where you're like solving these logic puzzles in order to just like open up the door and skip to the next island. It's not really.
Immediately sounds like something Ryan would like.
And it's something that I would like too. I like these sort of puzzle games. So the first thing they do is like they have you solve this slide puzzle. Where, you know, like old school Resident Evil style, where you have to like move things around in order to like put the tiles where they need to go in order to complete the thing. And I was like, oh, this is like the opening puzzle. This is going to be really cool. That's not what the game is. The game is more of like a pixel hunt, I spy kind of thing.
Ew.
Which, I mean, it's fine as that. It's good enough. But rather than like trying to solve like these logic puzzles, a lot of the times... like, it becomes, you go, okay, what thing do I need to poke next? Because, again, because of my old man hands, it's been good to play that game because you can play it entirely on the touch screen. And most of the time, most of the time when you are playing this game, you'll, like, find something to interact with. Here's a button you can press or a switch, and you press it. And then it, like, causes something to happen, something to rise out of the ground. Like, okay, here's some more switches I can press. And you, like have to rotate around to make sure you found all of the buttons on the pillar that rose up. And press them all and flick the little toggle, and then something else will happen. Every once in a while, they'll hit you with a puzzle, like, you know, those puzzles where, you know, you have, like, the source of water and then the pool at the end, and you have to, like, build the track for it by that sort of thing. Really light... sort of puzzles like that. But for the most part, the game is find the next thing you can poke. Which is fine. Like, there's room enough in the world for that sort of game to exist. Well, that's not what I thought the game was going to be. So I'm trying not to judge the game too harshly because I had a misconception about the game, what the game was. But that's also a little bit their fault. First, I'm like, it's a puzzle game. It's in really light
terms. It's I Spy.
In really light terms, it's a puzzle game. But, you know, it's also short. And there's nothing offensive happening. Like, I don't think it's, like, insulting my intelligence or anything like that. But, you know, I think, like, most sources that I looked at has, like 2 hours to beat it. So it's a really brisk game. And it's, like, divided up onto different islands. And each island, I think I've maybe spent, like, half an hour at most figuring out. And there's 5 or 6 islands. And I'm almost... I think I'm at the last one. I think there might be one more after it, but I'm nearly done with it. And I just kind of like do one a day and kind of poke around on my Switch touchscreen, which I'd never used before. And 4 years later, finally using the touchscreen. And there's this little old man and you're helping him off the island and you hunt for treasures and you poke your touchscreen and then you're done. This game, they're asking $20. I thankfully picked it up on deep discount. I think it was like 60 or 70% off. So I paid, and I didn't pay anything for it because I had like coins built up and I just used some coins and was able to get it for free. I think free is a fair price. No, I think like a few bucks in this game like might be worth a play if you're just looking for something like super chill.
When they do those at discounts, so it's like $1.99, trying to get everybody to that's the time to grab it.
Yeah, that'd be the perfect time. Like I think like this game just like as a super chill, don't really feel like doing anything or like I'm watching a show and don't really want to focus on a game right now, but want to have like that second screen going on. Like, sure, because you can just kind of touch your Switch for a while while you watch a show.
All right.
I don't know. Like the game is not offensive, but it's also $20.
Yeah.
$20. My goodness.
Speaking of high price points, we do sell Little Nightmares 2.
Yeah.
Physical copy.
Yeah.
We do sell that, and I have been warning guests whenever they bring it up to the register. I'm like,
oh,
hey,
I'm
letting you know. It is a very good game. I think it's great. You're gonna get like 4 hours of game time out of it. Mm. Just let you know. It's like $10 an hour.
It's
like
short. It's short.
It's gonna be a quick one. And so like somebody had a price match for like $30. I'm like, yeah, I guess that's okay. Like it's like it's good, but there's not enough there to really justify that price point. I mean that hurts.
I mean, I guess it depends on what you're looking for. Like with Little Nightmares 2, there's not really like if you can get it cheaper, hell yeah, always go for something cheaper if you can get it. Like
yeah,
don't pay full price if you have the option not to. I think that there's enough there. Like there's not as many experiences like that on Switch. There's like Little Nightmares 1, Little Nightmares 2. Like Inside, Limbo, something like that, but you're not going to get like, if you're really into really like detailed visual style, you're not going to get that out of anything else on Switch. They're kind of like singular experiences like that, Little Nightmares 1 and 2, because of the art style that they went with. So if you're really into that, and you've already played Little Nightmares 1, then, you know, I don't think that... Like, I paid... I was going to say I paid $40 for it. I didn't. I paid $33 for it. And I'm like, oh, I need my money back. But with something like Down in Bermuda, there are so many games for $20.
Oh, yeah. Just grab Celeste.
That you're going to get so much more out of.
Yeah.
So, if you're just looking to, like, play, like, a little indie game...
Not Down in Bermuda.
There's like 50 other games that should be ahead of it. Like there's a lot available on Switch. But yeah, those are the games that I got. You got anything else?
I picked up today. Well, I didn't pick it up, but a coworker lent it to me.
Right.
Because I've been burned before by this. Hyrule Warriors, Age of Calamity.
Right.
So I started, because I picked up the last one.
Yes.
And I put maybe 3 hours into it. I just couldn't really get into the game. It's very repetitive. You just run to an area, hack up all the guys up.
Which you knew, because we played on the Wii U on co-op.
Yeah, but sometime when we played in a co-op, I had much more fun with it.
Hmm.
And then I started playing it on my Switch. I was like, oh, this is not the group for my Switch.
Does Age of Calamity have co-op?
Yeah. I told you this. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
We'll have to do that sometime. But I'm borrowing my co-workers, because I did want to play, because it's Age of Calamity.
Uh-huh.
Get to, you know, the heroes, the champions.
Yeah,
let's go save Hyrule. And so I'm playing a little bit, and it's, I like how there's more options and stuff in the combat. There's the different Sheikah Slate abilities, and then there's those wizard wands you can pick up, even. And it seems like there's going to be a lot more strategy going on with this, and so I'm going to have to like think a little bit more. I did find myself kind of nodding off a bit at one point, because it was just, run to this area, hack all these guys up, run to this area, hack all these guys up. I mean, the Moblins and stuff like that are a little bit different. There's some strategy in the fights. They charge at you. You can pull up your ice pillar to stop them and then hack them up. And there's a blocking and dodging mechanics. There's a flurry mechanic. I mean, there's more going on with it than that.
Yeah, I think that adds a much needed layer of depth to just kind of like your, not like your crowd fights, but like your mini bosses. Not even really mini bosses, but like big enemies, like enemies of consequence. And like, and it's fun because like the things that they do and the ways you're countering them are going to correspond to the sort of weapons they have. So you know, like if an enemy with a spear is coming at you, you know at some point you're going to want to, I think it's the Cryosis. You're going to want to use the ice at some point. So you're like prepared, okay, I'm ready for this guy to do this maneuver, and I know exactly how I'm going to counter him. And then also like you have your different skill, not really skill, but like sub-weapon, like Link has his bow.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the characters, for the most part, with some exceptions at the end of the game, all behave really differently. Like, Link is a really different character from Impa or Zelda, and then once you get into the champions, they're all going to behave really differently as well.
Yeah, Impa I really like. I think Impa's a great character. I really like the whole get the rune, charge it, and then you got all those different Sheik clones. And
Yeah, you can start pumping out a lot of damage with once you get all those. Cool.
I like Impa a lot. So, I mean, I have high hopes for it. Hopefully, the little bit of extra layers of that is enough to keep me hooked on it and going. I'm going to still be playing this back and forth with Breath of the Wild because I still want to get going there. I got through Naboris.
Nice.
So, I got the whole, like, right side of the map exposed, and I did a bunch of stuff, but I didn't touch any of the beasts. And I went to the desert, and I got Naboris done. So, that was my first one. So, that was... I forgot how much fun that is. Going through that Divine Beast dungeon and everything. And that one's the biggest one in scale, I think.
Probably.
Yeah, I think that one is the most in-depth. I mean, the way that the game is designed to take you, there's definitely a growth in the Divine Beasts.
Yeah, I think that there is, even though they don't really explicitly say this is the way that you want to go, I think there is like that sort of nudging. Like, we're going to send you to Kakariko, then Hateno, and then at that point you can go wherever you want, but you're pretty close to this one, so why don't you just go there?
Just go knock out that elephant, Ruta. Just knock that. It's also the smallest one. It doesn't take long to do. It's like two rooms. And then Rudania is not that much to it. It's essentially a big room that's turning.
Yeah, and I think like when you get to Naboris, I think it's also the most intricate with having to like turn those cylinder rooms to like make the power go to the different parts of the camel. Yeah, I think you're probably. I think there is like a sort of suggested order to them, and I think that Naboris is probably like in their minds when they were building it, probably the last one they're going to try to nudge you toward. Which is why I wanted to do it first, the second time I played the game, because you know that
I wanted to mix it up. That power is so good.
Yeah.
Ugh.
It makes like taking out a lot of like the smaller encampments of enemies just inconsequential. Like, oh no, they saw me. Lightning.
But that, I forgot how damn good that game is.
Breath of the Wild is really
it's a real good game. Still holds up so good against all the other new games that came out since then. I mean, it's a fucking launch game.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still like one of the best games on the system.
It was a Wii U game.
Technically, but they made it for the Switch.
Yeah, in the same way that Twilight Princess is technically a GameCube game. Even though it came out on the Wii first. So, yeah. There's something I wanted to say about Age of Calamity. Oh, Age of Calamity. It's got a lot of content to it. Like, I expected to like maybe do like 20 or 30 hours in the game, but like by hour 40 I'm like, okay, time to wrap this up, and there was still more to do. So there's a lot there if you really like dig in and get into like all of the like the side missions and like and I really like the way that you're able to interact with the map as you go through.
There's a lot going on with that map. I'm really excited to see what goes on with that.
There is going to be a lot of things to do on that map.
So if you really like this kind of game where you're hacking and slashing, these warrior games, then this is one that you're going to get your money's worth out of.
Yeah, and there's plenty of them on the Switch as well. Like, who knew? Dynasty Warriors became a thing. All it took was a little elf dude in a green tunic. Because there's Hyrule Warriors and the Fire Emblem Warriors game, Age of Calamity. Persona 5 Strikers just came out, even though, like, from what I hear, it's not as, like...
Oh, is that supposed to be a warrior kind of game?
I think it's not quite as the same style Warriors game as something like Age of Calamity. I think it's a little bit more focused on individual fights rather than big hordes of enemies. Hmm. From what I've been able to gather about it. But then, like, Samurai Warriors 5 is coming out, like, in July.
Yeah, I'm skipping that. I mean, there's no way God's Green Earth I'm touching that.
Continuing like the weird trend of Tecmo Koei being the busiest publisher on Switch. All right, any other games we need to address or any other topics we need to get through before we close it out here?
No, I think it's a pretty good length for a pod. Just a nice little hour long.
Nice and brisk.
Yeah, nice and simple. You wanted to do a zero edit, right?
Yep, no edit on this show.
All right, penis.
Fucking hell. God damn it. It's bad enough we have the dog digging around in the sleeping bag over there. Yeah, like everybody hearing the scratches. But yeah, I watched a movie. I watched a few movies, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, the past couple days.
Are they new movies?
Because the old man hands. I've been watching more movies at night.
Like movies in prep for the retro show.
Both, actually. Okay. I watched a couple in prep for the retro show, but I also watched on HBO Max that movie Judas and the Black Messiah. That was real good.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a historical biopic about a political movement in Chicago, the Black Panther movement specifically in Chicago, and about the sort of leader of that movement, and the basically there is
a documentary.
There's an FBI mole participating in his movement because they are keeping tabs on them. Mm. So it's kind of like this a little bit of like a cat and mouse thing. Like, is he going to get found out? But it's mostly about just his views on politics in the world and how he's recruiting people to join his movement and stuff. It was real good. I don't want to get into too many spoilers, even though it's, you know, real life. But, because it is based on real people and real events. But yeah, I really dug that one. There's another newer one. And now it's escaping me. So I guess, you know what I watched the other day? I watched that Mad Max Fury Road.
Oh, God. All right.
I had seen it once before, and I think the first time I saw it, I was playing a game while I was watching it, and it's a lot of... Like, the entire movie is basically, like, driving, and, like, just big chase scenes over...
Fury Road. What game?
Right. there are brief moments throughout where, like, they actually stop the car and go do a thing outside of the car. But for the most part, you're just, like, watching a lot of people driving, like, fighting on cars and trucks and shit. But the first time I watched it, I don't even remember I finished it because I completely lost track of anything that was happening. But I watched it the other day and, like, that was legit pretty good. Like, I was surprised by the end of it. Like, did I like this? Like, yeah, that was all right.
Anyways, please watch Iron Mask. I really want to get your take on it. I really...
I'm going to check this shit out.
It's so bad. Apparently that movie is also based on two other movies that happened a long time ago.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, just on what I read briefly on the internet. Because I had to look this up, because I had to know what the fuck was happening.
It was like a series or like some sort of remake?
I don't even know. It's based on a thing, and there was a brief mention...
One of the characters, we're talking about Iron Mask again, dear God. One of the characters, like, in his character development thing in the very beginning of the movie, he had gone to this far-off land and seen some weird things and weird supernatural kind of things and everything like that. And apparently it's in hinting of, like, other movies based on this character. Or okay. Something. I don't fucking know. The movie's
a
train.
There's a mythology.
I would love to see your take on this giant wreck okay. of a movie.
I don't know. Oh. I think, like Mad Max and Fury Road and Blue Fire are similar because the only person ever to make this comparison. If I hadn't, like, stuck it out to the end, I probably would have, like, totally dismissed it again. Like, no, this is trash. I don't like this. And it just makes me think, like, there's this editorial on, I think it was on Nintendo Life, the website, where the author was just advocating for, like, quitting games, just not finishing if you don't feel like it. And, like, being, and I think there is something to, like, if you
agree, like, if you really, huge train wreck, walk away.
Right. If you're really not getting anything out of it and the game is just a broken mess and you don't like what you're doing, like, if you just really hate the game and there's nothing redeemable about it, then yeah, save yourself the time, move on. But I think there's something to seeing something through to the end and giving the game a chance to be what it is and kind of like play by the game's terms and seeing how you feel about it once it's been finished. Like Blue Fire is just the most recent example that I can think of. Like that's a game, if I had just completely stopped because like a few things had gotten in my way, I would have hated it. There's another game that I can't think of right now where I wasn't having a great time until I got to the end, and then in retrospect I ended up liking it more than I thought I did. But, you know, I think, like, games to an extent, like, certain types of games, stopping, like, halfway through or when you don't feel like playing it anymore is kind of like going to a really nice restaurant, like, oh, we're going to serve you this 5-course meal. And after 3 courses, like, no, I'm done. I'm leaving. Like, well, you haven't gotten the full experience yet. Now, there are a lot of games that are just like randomly generated. Like when I'm talking about these sorts of games, I'm talking like games like that are like crafted to want to deliver a certain type of experience. A game like Breath of the Wild, like it gives you a lot of freedom, but there is like a way that they want you to play, and then everything in the game works to try to craft a very specific experience for you. Everything from the way that your stamina and hearts work to like how your weapons break. There is a way that Nintendo wanted you to play the game when they were building it. There are a lot of games that are most common with like roguelike games where it's kind of randomly generated. Here's a level that we built, go do it. Or a level that an algorithm built for us, go do it. And like those games that were, it's not like specifically crafted, like we want you to do these sorts of things in this order and build your skill this way. I don't think I would have not have any problem with anyone just kind of quitting. Because it's not like it's not really supposed to be a specific experience. The mileage is going to vary. But like even games that give you a lot of freedom, something like a Skyrim where you don't even have to like do the main quest at all ever. Like,
oh yeah, I've done the main quest once, but I've put hundreds of hours into this game.
But that they do give you a lot of freedom to experience it the way you want to. And there still are like goals. There are still things that you should do if you only want to do like certain quest lines and things.
You have a PS4 now. Do you want to borrow Skyrim?
No, not yet. Maybe at some point. But yeah, I don't know. I think that there is something to like seeing it through to the end and trying to make a judgment on what you just did at that point. Again, or something, so just a broken train wreck of a disaster, then sure, stop.
Get out.
But I think that you do have to be willing to like play ball with the developer and like it's like, oh, okay, what is it that you are, what is the game that you were trying to make, rather than what do I want this game to be? Anyway, I'm rambling at this point. We should end.
Okay.
Next up is
the Retro Show.
The Retro Show, exactly. Yeah.
We're gonna need Ryan for that one.
Yep.
Because I mean, where else are we gonna get the music talk that? Yeah, let's hear more about the 90s music.
I'm gonna talk about this
obscure band that no one really knows.
Metal band that put out an LP.
Yeah.
In March of 2000. Yeah, it's cool. It's one of his hobbies. He should be able to talk about it. We also got we'll have some movies to talk about too. There's not really a whole lot in the way of games, and we'll front load the episode with any sort of games that I'm able to dig up. But it's getting to a point in the year 2000 that you know we'll have some N64 games coming up over you know the spring and the summer that are going to be worth digging into and talking about. But like games on other systems, like especially the Game Boy, the Game Boy's a real desert, so there's not really much to talk about there. There is going to be a launch of a new system. The Game Boy Advance is going to be on the horizon very soon, which will be very cool to talk about. But as far as like PlayStation games, like there might be some like a Sega Dreamcast games that will be worth at least mentioning. But you know, we'll try to keep some sort of Nintendo focus on the front end of the show. That way, Jason can bail out if he wants to. But yeah, after that we'll do the official show. And we'll have to try to schedule the official show for after Monster Hunter. Because Monster Hunter will be the big new release.
Yeah, for us to talk about. It comes out on the 26th, mm-hmm. right? Yeah.
Other than that, I don't think I'm going to be picking up any other new games this month. I think that's going to be the big one.
Yeah, I'm holding out for that. I mean, I definitely wasn't going to buy anything. I almost bought Luigi's Mansion because it was on sale.
Oh, for Mario Day?
Yeah, for Mario Day. I almost bought it because it was only $38. That was good. I ended up picking up another game that I don't plan on getting to for a little bit, but I want to get while it's still cheap, Rogue Squadron for the PS4.
Okay.
So I do have that. I may mess with it here Rogue and there. Squad.
Is that...
It's just a spaceship fighter for Star Wars.
Is that... Because Rogue Squadron was... The name of the Star Wars...
On the
N64. On the N64, there's also GameCube and...
Yeah, there's a new one.
Oh, interesting.
And it came out not that long ago.
I wonder who developed.
A little while ago. I forget when it came out. But yeah, it's a new one that came out, so...
Because Factor 5 was the developer of the first three.
I could look at the case and let you know. I got no idea.
And they kind of... sort of went away. They went... bankrupt, but they still like exist as an entity.
I still think it's an EA thing because they did Star Wars Battlefront, and I think that's where a lot of the engine came from.
Yeah, they had that Star Wars license wrapped up for a while. I think it just recently got to a point where it's no longer exclusive to EA.
Yeah, I don't know if it's still EA making this because I think it's a Battlefront engine that they're using for the actual air combat stuff.
They use that Frostbite engine they love so much.
Nah. But, you know, my coworker got it, and he said he was liking it, and it was $20, so I was like, screw it, let's grab it.
Cool.
It's half off, so.
All right, well, yeah. That's a
good ending point.
End of the month. We'll talk about some Monster Hunter, then talk about the games that are going to be coming out in April, like Pokemon Snap.
Oh.
New Pokemon Snap, even.
You can only get so erect.
All right. That's it. That's the end. Till next time.
So long.